boater and sharp as a knife. I've worked on the junction for most of my life, with a pair of steel boats, 7 kids and a wife, and I fancy I'll carry on boating. I've fought with me windlass and taken some knocks, from the Brummagem Wars to the Western Point docks, and I fought for me turn on the Camden Town locks when I'm wanted in Limehouse for loading. Myself and me missus have nearly been drowned when working by night on the 15-mile pound, with a big load of spelter for Birmingham bound, and the weather has been pretty bloody. I've been down to Oxford with a load of DS, 55 ton out of Griffarm no less, and I boated to Wellingborough, 2 boats abreast, when the water's been coming down floody. You can talk of your rail and your whole highway code, but there's nowt like a pair with a 50-ton load, when your buddy swims well and you get a good road right over the Cowras to Leighton. So wind up your motor and let your blades churn, keep a sharp eye on the oil that you burn, and feel for the snacks from the butty astern, and don't keep the company waiting.
There was an old saying in the old days, nothing was too heavy and the weather was never too dark. The traffic went through. Wonderful. The only time as they were really stopped was when the elements were too bad, such as when the canal was frozen up.
When the boats are fast in the icy blast and the strong nor'easters roar, then we pay the price of the frost and ice in laying up and waiting for a thaw. When the credit bills in the cutside tills are steadily increasing every day, then it's cut by half pay in cash or starve is the working boatman's way.
Oh, we had a job to get along. We had a very day atop of Curtis. Couldn't get through the ice. They kept breaking it. There was no wind of water to go into Birmingham and back.
I remember it when you couldn't break it.
At Stockton, we sunk the ice boat there. 3 men went down with her.
Well, they get a boat, and there's so many men of one side and so many men of the other. And they were rocking this boat like this here with a oars, that thing, you know. And somehow or other, this darn thing broke. And one lot went in backwards, another went on top of. Ooh, it was terrible. Well, I went on the ice through the tunnel about 1893, I think it was, at Snaresdon. It's never been froze over since. The ice boat used to come through from Moira. It was a seal boat, and they used to have 26 horses on at the worst periods, from Derby, Midland Railway horses.
When I first started, it was nearly all horse-drawn boats.
You could see a dozen times. They could tell who was coming by the horse. I mean, some fellas had what we might call a grey horse for years and years, and they'd say it's so-and-so. And if you just happen to make a mistake, then I say, well, that's the first time I've seen him as he hadn't got a grey horse. Of course, that's another thing, the horses. I mean, they was fine animals in them days. I mean, there was anything from 12 to 18 hours for a horse. And the horse used to be as tired as the men 9 times out of 10. He was the main thing. I mean, he was their engine sort of thing.
You wouldn't be a good boatman in those days without you had a love of horses. The horse should be first consideration, because he's the chap that makes your coppers for you. It should be fed, cleaned, looked after, bedded down for the night before we should expect any food or anything for ourselves. If he'd been out in the wet, and he wouldn't put a damp collar on the horse in the morning if he were a good boatman. He'd have his collar dry. Put on like it, put your socks on. They wouldn't have their horse knocked about. They'd look after him. If you'll start to let the boat run about, you see? If you don't steady her up, well, she'll keep doing that. Now, that was hard work for the horse.
They would see who could get the best turnout of brasses and crochet ear caps. Even the nose tins that they used to carry to feed the horse would be painted in the old traditional style with the roses and diamonds all around and a brass buckle polished up, all to match the harness. It was lovely.
Each horse had a name and a number, and that horse would be booked to you. They was all well-trained, and going through the tunnel, he'd hang his head over the rail like that, you see, so as his ear shouldn't catch the arch of the tunnel. After they'd been on about 3 months, you could just say, in the dark or daylight, carry on, he'd take you. With the exception of locks, like, and drawbridges, they couldn't pull bridges off very well.
You would be lonely without your horse, because your horse, if you'd got a good horse and he was used to you, he could almost talk to you. He would tip you off when there was another horse coming. He'd shuffle about and his ears would start to go and his head would shake, and you see, he'd know. Oh, horses are most intelligent, most wonderful animals. I've done many trips on my own with a horse. You see, a horse will often do his work a lot better than a man. And you let the horse, let him alone, let him do his work, and he'll do it. They'll stop at a certain place. They know how far they've got to pull a boat. You'll see a good horse will ease himself off at the bridge. He wouldn't pull through a bridge as hard as he would on the other. He likes the boat to come slow into the bridge, because if you pull it fast, it stops the boat. And he knew his stables at night, where he was going to be fed. You could give him water out of the canals. Boat horses didn't like tap water. They liked canal water. Well, I've had horses that wouldn't drink tap water. They didn't like it. Oh, yeah, very funny. One morning, a horse was starting the boat, and somebody frightened him, and he went into the canal. And he got bogged in the bottom of the canal, which is very muddy and marshy. And I could see that I was going to lose him if I tried to get him out, because the more he struggled, the more he'd go in the mud, you see. So the only thing was, I'd jump in with him. I jumped in and pushed him into the deep water, see, so he swam up the middle of the canal, me with him, till it got onto solid ground, and we got him out and walked him out and brought him back in the stable. Oh, yes, you do, a lot for your horse.
And number one came a backer in by, and they say so, and they hope so. And we said, old man, that horse will die, oh, poor old horse. At Exelwolf they go to load, and they say so, and they hope so. And then he pulls out on the London road, oh, poor old horse. Oh, we'll work all night and he'll work all day, and they say so, and they hope so. Put him on the inside and he'll back her away, oh, poor old horse. From Maddiston in the arts in length, and they say so, and they hope so. 'Twas there that poor beast broke his strength, oh, poor old horse. And after years of such abuse, and they say so, and they hope so, you're salted down for sailor's use, oh, poor old horse.
He always had a mule. He was working up till after the war with his mule.
Well, he used a fancy mule, but not little horses. We were sure-footed. Well, we got stables a distance apart to put them. Polesworth and Harriston, Nuneaton, Hawkesbury Stop, Brinklow and Newbolt, Ilmorton, Willoughby and Branston, Bugby and Aford, and Blisworth, Stoke, Barrowmastoke, Thruppbridge, Cosgrove, and Linford, and Finney.
I mean, when you've had animals all your lifetime, you know whether one's been ill-used or whether it hasn't. See? This mule that we had a very good position in the army. You could tell by the way it had been handled.
Yes, we got on with him all right. We used to like him. My father used to work horses. He used to have mules and all. And a few donkeys.
The donkeys worked in pairs. You always had them alongside one another. If you ever tried to single one out when you come to any narrow towing path, you couldn't get on at all, because the donkey in front, he kept stopping to look around to see where his mate was. So you'd always got to keep them in pairs.
Yes, I've heard of that, but I've never seen none down this path. I used to have two horses on the one line, running the two boats. They used to work regularly to Banbury with coal to the electric light works. The old Barlinders used to be about 15 horsepower. which were sadly blown up. It was in the early 1920s it was first introduced. That's rather simple to use. If I could use them, whereas some of the more complicated diesel engines today, they would be lost with them. Fellows Morton and Clayton, they would have nothing else.
Canterbury Brothers of Bourneville, they were the first to have the motorboat, the Bollinger engine.
She was a fine machine. She used to run like hell in the night when all her parts were clean. I lit her up one morning at the bottom of the engine 10. She pulled around the basket pan before she fired again. And then she burned a gallon of stroke. Tiddy for la, tiddy for la. You could see damn all for smoke. Tiddy for la, tiddy for la. The motor went so fast. I wound her up full blast. She pulled out my buddy's mast. Tiddy for la, tiddy for la. Tra la 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 la. Smacked it into the cut. I knew a Braunston lassie once, her age was 34. She'd never had a man, and so her heart was very sore. One night as she was going to bed, she thought she heard a sound. And looking underneath the bed, a burglar she found. But she didn't shout nor scream, tiddy for la, tiddy for la. She didn't scream nor faint, tiddy for la, tiddy for la. Soon she made what sure was a man. She cried hooray. She locked the bloody door, tiddy for la, tiddy for la. Tra la 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 la, smacking it into the cook. Myself, my wife, the mother-in-law went down the limehouse quay. My mother-in-law got out in a boat for a sailor she would be. She hadn't been gone a quarter of an hour before we hears a shout. My mother-in-law's in the water and there she's splashing about. She shouts her help, I can't swim, tiddy for la, tiddy for la. Says, oh, now's your time to learn, tiddy for la, tiddy for la. My wife, she says, you hound, you'll never watch her drown. I says, I'll shut my bloody eyes, tiddy for la, tiddy for la. Tra la 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 la, smacking it into the cook. How do you ken old Streetie's men, the ones we had to take? They take a load of DS down the jammo once a week. I was standing on the inside along the Langley Wide, and I sees a pair of boats a come we half an inch aside. I says, big off, just look at the boat, tiddy for la, tiddy for la. It just can't be afloat, tiddy for la, tiddy for la. The captain must be drunk, his butty looks like it's sunk, but it's only Jackie Monk, tiddy for la, tiddy for la. Tra la 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 la, smacking it into the cup.
Make a cabin a most comfortable place because it's so close. There's everything to your hand.
Both about the same on the body boat and the motor boat. About 8'6" long and about 6 foot wide and about 5 foot high.
Almost square, you know. 7 to 8 foot long and 7 foot wide. Those youngsters were born in the cabin, in a small cabin.
Lived in those cramped quarters. How they used to do it, I don't know.
I have 21 children. They was all born on the canal.
I was born 54 years ago on a canal boat at Cow Lane Wharf, Chester. Most of the canal children went through without any education at all. And at the present day, there's a lot of them about that can't read and write.
Well, I can't read that much now, you see. Wasn't in long enough to really learn, you know. Well, they just pushed us to the back of the class, but that was it.
Used to go to school at every place where we stopped at, say Elsmerport, Birmingham, Brantford, Middlesex. Any school used to take them in, just for half a day or a day where we stopped at. All my children were scholars.
I've never been to a school, no. But we could sit on the cabin tops and then we used to have a bit of slate and a bit of chalk. And as the railway trucks were going along, we'd take down the letters, not knowing what it stood for. And we'd keep that and take it in to the toll keeper. And he looked, he said, yes, you got that right.
Yes, I went to school. 7 years and a half.
Very few of our children ever had any schooling. I mean, if they'd go for half a day, perhaps for a full day, and then the next day, then they moved off. If they went in the morning, sometimes at dinner time, they couldn't go back again because the boat was ready to go, and that was it.
It was about 5 half-days. Yeah. 3 years out of Newport, 2 at Brentford.
Well, I had more chance than what Alice did, you see. I went at Runcorn, Stoke-on-Trent, and various places. But I was one of those that kind of didn't like school. I used to get out as quick as I could.
Went past boats. We'd tell her what the letters are. Now, when we met that same boat again, she knew what we told her.
Sometimes they're all weak at some places, you see, just according to which depot we run into. Because my father was working for the Hamilton Company then, you see. And then I used to go to Runcorn School. That was about the best I liked. Used to have about a week there, and then probably when you come out one day, you find your boat and got to Western Point, and then you had to walk a mile then after it.
It helped a good lot when you was a scholar on the boats, because there was different people as come and ask you to read letters and things for them.
Read this, Sir Harold. I used to read it, and he used to leave it there, and he'd say, just answer it, will you please, and same place, same time. Same with all the business letters, he used to write it for him.
As well as ordinary letters, other letters I used to write and read for was the love letters. The paper used to be what I call perfumed. The envelopes used to bear some kind of particular flower, either a wallflower, or a little daffodil, or a little crocus. And we used to say, "Dear Lizzie, we are loading at Brantford for Birmingham, and I shall be there on such and such a date. Try and arrange to see me atop of Gas Street or atop of Tipton 3.
There wasn't very much courting attached to it, apart from asking how well you were in health when you passed each other on the way, and you was lucky if you met up with each other at a discharging point where you unloaded and loaded your boats again.
When I met my wife first, you see, I naturally thought, well, there's a nice girl for me, and the mop on the top, which we use for drying up and washing down with, I raised that in the air, you see. That was a sort of like make a date.
Oh, I just waved back.
And then the next time I got with her, that's how we come together.
Probably wouldn't see one another for weeks. That's what happened, wasn't it? Sometimes you see twice a week, wouldn't they? And sometimes it go longer, you see.
Well, and then when you do get a night with you, well, you get a night, it's say about 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night, when there's several boats, you know, get tied up together as you practically meet these young girls, you know, and you sort of go in the cabins and get mates with one another, and then you sort of, oh, well, she's all right, I'll take her on. And then you probably see her that night, and you'll probably go 3 weeks, 5 weeks, and you never see her again.
You used to, I suppose, smile at each other in the first place, and then if you got very friendly, they used to exchange presents. Your parents used to sort of give you a little guidance, whether they was a good family or whether they were poor.
Keep your hands off, that's mine. You just be careful what you do. That little bit of fancy work, it doesn't belong to you, but she's a nice girl. I know, and she squeezes absolutely fine. You can do just what you like with any other fella's wife, but keep your hands off, that's mine.
My mate. You see, a boatman always referred to his wife as his mate. And his wife always referred to her husband as her mate. It was never my wife. My husband, and many a time I've heard the captain, which was of course the husband, he'd say, "My mate's got the ticket, Sammy. He's got it in her apron pocket."
The wages in those days weren't very much.
Because running a pair of boats is not a one-man job, it's a family job.
Mother and father and three others.
You did get a couple of brothers sometimes, grown men that would work a boat. Yeah, but it's nearly always a man and his wife and the family.
We decided to have two boats instead of one, which made the standard of living a little bit better, but harder work for the children.
Well, I have to work the butty boat, to look after children, get meals ready, besides keeping the cabin and the outside clean.
There's a certain amount of contentment amongst it, you know, you don't feel hemmed in any way, and you can use your own initiative to a big extent on it.
I met a bloke walking through Pedder. He said I could laugh till I cried. I've been and got shot of me mate on the cut, and he's married a willow wren bride. Married, married, he's married a willow wren bride.
No one seemed to care for them. They have so many things the matter. And my father said that it would be nice if I would take care of the boat people. They're a large family, as you know. And one will come into the surgery with a... I've got a cough this severe, with a scratch or a real wound, especially during the winter with the icy ropes and the slippery planks that go across the boat. And, of course, again with the windlass, which becomes iced. And on all these little scratches and pimples, we have to put a dressing and make a bottle of medicine out of coloured water for the cough.
A good boatman, he must have white corduroy trousers with the bell buttons, you know, double-breasted waistcoat, two rows of buttons, and this here billy cock hat sort of a thing. That was the traditional dress for the boatman.
Well, they was real smart with their corduroy trousers with the bell bottoms and the velvet seams and the diamond stitching, fancy knitted braces with the brass buckles, and they used to have the silk thrums, what they used to use in the whip, go across from buckle to buckle, tied in a bow down the front of the white cotton unmade shirt with the feather red stitching all down the front.
And then, of course, the women, they always wore an apron and then quite a fabulous sort of a bonnet. It come right down with a shoulder piece, more like a cape.
Corsets, you know, very often. Perhaps the line had got foul, the man had gone ahead. There was only just a woman left on the boat. He'd run along to clear that line, shake it away, then run back again and jump on the cabin as the boat was going out. But he got no knickers on, you know, and the wind her clothes would fly up. Very often her breasts would fly out and it'd run to the chain, you see. And as I was going down the pound, I turned around and I said, well, they worth looking at? I said, you look where I'm going. I wasn't looking real good. I'd have gone down the weir instead of in the lock.